Imagine being the first person to ever send a payment over the internet. New things can be scary, and crypto is no different. It's new, but like the internet, it's also revolutionary. Making your first crypto trade feels easy with 24/7 support when you need it. Go to Kraken.com and see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures, Inc., PVI, DBA, Kraken. Visit PVI's disclosures at kraken.com/legal/disclosures.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, we look into the future and count down the things we don't want to see in 2022.
Some of this is kind of an expansion of an area we'll call digital humans. The idea that we've got more and more representations of ourselves in the world in the current decade and beyond. We're going to see more and more kind of almost partnerships with a robot or other form of automation in the workplace so that we're working side by side. The phrase for this that's often used is called cobots or robot coworker. Some of my biggest fears probably have a lot to do with algorithmic influence. These systems have the potential to, if not themselves manipulate us, be able to be used by other people to manipulate us.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share, leave a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So the big question in this episode, what does the future have in store for us in 2022 and beyond? Our first guest studies exactly that. Everything from digital humans and emotional intelligence to algorithms, biohealth, and the role that artificial intelligence will play in the coming decades. This is futurist Richard Yonk.
Moving into 2022, what do you essentially see ahead for us this year and kind of in the immediate future?
There's really, from my standpoint, so many different fields, so many different considerations. So I'll talk about things like artificial intelligence. And right now we've got an enormous amount of advancement being made in voice tech and different aspects of being able to incorporate voice as interface, but also voice as a means of supplementing human workforce and human intelligence. Some of this is kind of an expansion of an area we'll call digital humans. The idea that we've got more and more representations of ourselves in the world, in the workplace, certainly increasingly in the metaverse, cyberspace, whatever we want to call it, in which we will be able to have representatives of ourselves, some pretty rudimentary right now, but over time they'll be able to be our emissaries, essentially be able to perform certain basic routine tasks, know what our preferences are, whether that's booking a flight for us or even something as currently complex as performing an interview for us.
You know, for me, like looking at this from a complete outsider's perspective, I guess like what's the point? Like what's the goal of creating this kind of virtual selves?
Definitely a valid question. In terms of creating a virtual world, there's a lot of hype, a lot of tech interest where you have this plan, this desire to create an alternate form of reality. The thing is that a lot of people push back on this and say, you know, I mean, here we're trying to create this alternate reality, and we're actually creating a more space, more distance between ourselves. We're creating new ways of essentially distancing ourselves from human contact and human interaction. So that's definitely a negative and definitely a reason why this would be you know, not necessarily as everything everybody wants it to be. On the other hand, as a in a business use case, the opportunity to create things like digital humans, digital avatars that can represent us and be used for performing various routine and repetitive tasks in the workplace can increase efficiency and essentially reduce the number of people that are needed to perform a particular task. Right now, we're seeing a real disconnect in terms of the number of people who are available to work and the number of jobs. They're not meshing. We have a lot of gap there. And one of the ways that this is unfortunately going to be addressed by some business is through increased automation.
How soon do you think that's going to happen? Like when you look for the rest of the 2020s, what do you kind of see coming?
Parts of it are already happening. It's mostly a question of how good is it? Is it going to be dependable enough that you can put it into a work environment a decade from now? Oh, yeah. I would anticipate that we will see a lot of this.
And when we talk about chatbots, we're kind of talking about the idea of the thing, like you do the, hey, I've got a problem with this company. You talk to this thing, it, like you put in the answer and you get an answer immediately back, like that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But instead of having an obvious computer, it would be like me giving those answers.
Right now, you might see an image. It might be photographically realistic. It may be something more cartoonish that is meant to kind of help suggest that this is a person-to-person interaction. And that it kind of tweaks some of what Sherry Turkle of MIT used to call, or still calls, our Darwinian buttons. Essentially, we are one of the earliest things we did as a species was develop language and a means of interacting with each other through emotional and visual cues, a lot of nonverbal cues, and so forth. So to have visual avatars that continue that or extend that will essentially make us feel more and more like we are engaging with another person. And we fall into that habit very, very easily.
We will feel more like we're engaging with a real person, but it will be less of a real person that we're engaging with at the same time.
Correct. These are basically statistical models. They're simply connecting words and strings of words and phrases together based on statistics. So there's no awareness there.
When you kind of look into the future, are we more poised now for a bigger change than we have been in the past? How close are we to the next big thing?
The next big thing is always around the corner, and you never know exactly when it's going to happen. If you're speaking about AI and so forth, we're still quite some ways out from, let's just say, something that is artificial general intelligence or something very self-aware and so forth. That's still many, many decades away. In terms of just technological development and innovation, every single day. There's so much out there, and there's so many things that everyone is doing. Knowledge has a tendency to create self-reinforcing loops. And so all of a sudden, we're able to do things with our knowledge of genetics and using AI and bioinformatics to start mining and finding out new ways to generate new drugs, treatments, therapies, and so forth. This coming decade is going to be huge for biotechnology and healthcare, digital healthcare. So this is definitely a time in which we are going to see enormous innovation over the course of really the coming decades. I don't foresee it slowing down. If anything, it will accelerate.
Has COVID changed any of that? Did COVID speed it up, pause it, mm-hmm. have no difference at all? Like, what do you think?
When COVID hit, it accelerated a number of technologies and really put the brakes on a number of others. So that right there, shows you how things that occur in our world, in our environment, that maybe aren't necessarily anticipated can skew the direction that technology and other trends are developing. So To be more specific, we saw an enormous advancement in areas like, remote technologies, things like Teams and Zoom and everything else. They really went to town expanding their capabilities during that period. Some of the abilities to deal with situations remotely, whether that's various forms of delivery, drone work, and so forth, these advanced. On the other hand, during that time, certainly we saw a huge drop off early COVID, at least, in things like, for instance, rideshare. Some of it is about the industries. Some of it is about the technologies that are considered to be viable to roll out during that time.
What do you think is kind of going to be the next big technology?
AI is permeating everything. A lot of people don't recognize is that AI is here. AI is everywhere. And every time it rolls out in some new fashion and is incorporated into various devices in our environment, various parts of our environment, we think it's all very cool, very new for a very short period of time. It gets good and then it kind of disappears into the environment. It's part of our background and it's pervasive. It's there, but we don't think about it. So a bunch of the things that go on in our cars, things that go on in our homes, the applications that we use on the computer. All of these are using various aspects and forms of AI. Some of them are going to continue to get more intelligent. Some of them, there's not much point in adding to it. But the fact is that over the course of this decade and the next, we're going to see a range of deep learning technologies, forms of machine learning come out and be used in pretty much everything in our world. So just expect that that's going to become more and more a part of our world, and much of it will become less aware of over time.
Is this going to be stuff, though, that's like ultimately going to be good for society, or is this going to be stuff that, we go to the lowest common denominator? And what I mean by that is, like, we invented the internet and we could use it to have all of the information at our fingertips, but instead we kind of use it to snipe at people on Twitter, right? Like, is this going to be good for society kind of things, or?
It's an ongoing issue and a very important question to be asking. Social media, certainly the internet, they didn't turn out quite the way people expected or wanted. And one of the things that I advocate is that we incorporate more of a technology assessment in the early design processes of these new innovations, because this allows us to can allow us to try to anticipate and overcome some of the different kinds of issues we see with new technologies.
Yeah, and no, I think that a lot of the things that we would kind of naturally talk about are summed up in some of our listeners' questions, so mm-hmm. I want to jump into them. This one, I think, kind of hits at the thing that we were just talking about. Are we creating something we don't understand?
That's a very big question. Are we creating something we don't understand? Absolutely. We are continuously in the process of, in the course of building the world, building the future, we create things. We don't understand all the ways it will be utilized, all the ways it will develop, the unanticipated consequences of it. When people developed the automobile, the early gas engine, they did not anticipate the way that it was literally going to transform our cities, our country, our environment. If cars didn't exist, our cities would have an entirely different configuration. And things like as simple as, how we lay out streets or pathways, how we commit enormous amounts of space to parking and so forth. All these things were never foreseen at that time. This happens with every single technology.
When will the future look really different? And I think what they mean by that is, like, if I were to get into a time machine, Like, how far in advance would I have to go where I'd be like, oh, this doesn't even look like Earth anymore. Like, I don't recognize this.
If you could have looked down on the Earth in 1900, we would, with enough resolution, we would be able to definitely tell that this is a very transformed world. Part of it is what the expectation is, and as with other kind of forms of thinking, imagery, what have you, resolution. So the more detail we look at, the more things have transformed and changed. As I say, AI is pretty much everywhere. It's it. But if you don't know what to look for, if you aren't able to, you know, peer into the workings of a particular technology to understand or to see that, you don't know that that's going on. Our world has transformed and is transforming rapidly in terms of it becoming what I typically refer to as more and differently intelligent. There's a growing preponderance of machine intelligence. Some of it is skewed and biased, and this is transforming our world. Depending on what you're looking at, you could say that the world transforms almost unrecognizably, you know, in as little as a decade. Think about what the world was like before social media.
What are we getting first, flying cars or jetpacks?
We've got both. Jetpacks are actually kind of useful and cool there's definitely being incorporated more and more by the military. There's some real benefits there. Flying cars, we're getting into something that's kind of different there from the standpoint we can engineer almost anything. At this stage, it's down to, within the laws of physics, it's down to economics for the most part. When you talk about a flying car, if you mean the Jetsons, where it is something that has no apparent method of thrust, that's going to be a long time. If you're talking about something that's basically a personalized airplane or helicopter, a quadcopter, what have you, there's some thought about that being appealing to people, you know, who have considerable wealth, to kind of skip around some of the traffic jams and problems in an urban environment and so forth. That is a different matter and gets into a range of issues around inequality, problems of what happens when, you know, certain parts of society forego what everyone else has to use. Is that to the detriment? Does that lead to deterioration of those services and so forth? So that's a big problem. But down to the real issues of having cars just kind of flying through the air on a, you know, almost like another level of traffic, human beings did not evolve to navigate a three-dimensional space. We've always pretty much occupied two, possibly two and a half dimensions. We aren't flyers. So there's two problems with that. We really make mistakes really quickly. So we've got to turn all of that over to AI and that's got to have gotten to the point where that's really good. But any small accident, you have a fender bender on the freeway, okay, you pull over. You have a fender bender in the sky, it's a catastrophic failure and you fall. That's to your detriment, and it's a big problem for the city below. So there you get into regulation, liability. The insurers are not going to let that happen.
I was thinking about that. I was traveling over Thanksgiving and was like thinking, could you imagine if all these cars were just flying all over the place? Like, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Will robots take over the world?
Some people would say they already have. They will not take over the world for a very, very long time, in the sense of a Skynet, Robopocalypse, Terminator type style takeover. On the other hand, there's the economics of using robots to supplement the workforce in the current decade and beyond. We're going to see more and more kind of almost partnerships with a robot or other form of automation in the workplace, so that we're working side by side with technologies that are increasingly intelligent and increasingly able to perform certain tasks that they can do better than we can, either through because of the repetition, speed, what have you. The phrase for this that's often used is called cobots, or it's like a robot coworker. And this idea is pretty much developing in a slow evolutionary pace at this point, but it's increasingly how we work. We use technology all the time in our work, in our environment, different applications, certain amounts of AI that do analysis for us and so forth. This is just a further extension of this into the physical space. And certainly we're already seeing this in warehouses and other kinds of manufacturing and so forth.
In terms of biohealth, what do you think will be happening in that arena? Like, where do you think the changes are going to be there?
Right now, we are on the verge of an enormous amount of innovation and advancement in biotechnology. We have had the ability to sequence the human genome in detail for a couple of decades now. So it's taking a lot of time, but we're figuring out some really interesting approaches and gaining new knowledge about how our bodies work, how biology works. And so we're getting some new ways to deal with cancers through immunotherapy. We have to be very careful of is creating problems for ourselves or future generations through the misuse of that. Genetic manipulation at this point. We have different tools like CRISPR. With that, potentially, we have the ability to make changes to the gametes, the eggs and sperm that ultimately lead to the next generations. If that is changed or manipulated, that can go really, really wrong. And the problems may not show up for generations.
What is your safest prediction for the future? And what is your boldest prediction for the future? Like, so bold that if you're around, like, all your futurist buddies, like, you're not even going to say it. It's so bold that, like, they're going to laugh at me if I even suggest this. But what is your boldest and your safest prediction?
Safest prediction's easy. The sun comes up tomorrow. So the expectation that all aspects of the future are unknown or unknowable. It really runs through a whole gamut, a spectrum of certainties. The one that's out there has been speculation that somehow or another we are going to have an ability to interact with the past at some point. I find this highly unlikely, but if you extrapolate that long into the future, then at some point down the road, you could potentially have a version of our society, our civilization, affecting change in the past. I find that almost impossible. Ah, okay, there's one I definitely dispute. Okay, the concept that we are living in a simulation. There are people who have talked about this. I think Musk, I'm not sure if Max Tegmark said something similar, but on the order of a 50% likelihood that we are in fact living in a simulation. I am going to go with the far more specific prediction that there is a far less than 1% chance we are living in a simulation. It's possible, but that's my prediction. It's very, very, very unlikely.
I don't even want to, think about that. I don't even want to think about it, right? But I've always been
How would you know?
What's the reason that some people think we are living in a simulation? Like, where's the...
No proof. So this is one of the big problems with it. It's not falsifiable in any way that I've been able to figure out.
Let me follow up that excellent point by movie or TV show that you feel has the most accurate depiction of the future.
I love these things for entertainment, but I am simply not going to say any of them are really good representations of our reality. And certainly not yet.
Did you think we'd be farther ahead by now?
Great question. And very general. Thank you. There have been definitely times over the years and decades where I looked ahead and explored things and thought, yeah, we'll be at this stage at this point, and we're not. So early 2000s, we had predictions and some pretty accurate ones that we were going to start seeing autonomous vehicles in around 2017 or so. They're not out there in the form quite the way we would have thought, that it wasn't going to be like, oh, they're going to take over the roads. But the technology is there. The technology developed, and we're at currently what SAE talks about, the Society of Automotive Engineers talks about, is level 4 autonomous vehicles. We won't see true autonomous vehicles till probably 2030 or beyond. And I think that that's probably going to be pretty accurate. In terms of where, I think I thought at certain stages that certain aspects of artificial intelligence and its ability to have more contextual understanding would be further along at this point. We're moving into a stage that has been referred to as the third wave of AI, that some of this is developing into their projects that are developing more and more capability of reasoning, common sense, one-shot learning, or learning more like human beings do in these systems. And we're going to see that advance quite a bit over the next decade or two. But I think I thought some of that was going to be here a little faster than it was.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the thing that I've always heard of, like describing AI and the challenges with it, is that you can teach a computer perfectly how to play chess, all the strategies, all the stuff, but it can't then take all that knowledge and use it to play checkers. Like, it can't think the way that we can, where we can take lessons from one thing and transition into another thing.
Sure. Right now, when you talk about that example, we're talking about neural networks. These are systems that over the past couple of decades have gotten really good at certain very specific tasks. They take an enormous amount of training, lots and lots of data, and once trained, they can perform very, very well. There is, when an attempt is made to retrain, something occurs that's called catastrophic forgetting. I'm not sure that's quite right. But anyway, the point is, it loses pretty much most of what it has learned, or all of what it has learned, because it's not actually learning. So one of the things that's in this new third wave that is being worked on is to be able to accrete knowledge, to build on prior knowledge to inform what comes after. And that's what much more like what we do today. The other aspect of all of that, I've written a couple of different books about the future of artificial intelligence, Future Minds and Heart of the Machine. And in Heart of the Machine, I explore the future of what's known as artificial emotional intelligence, or emotion AI. And these are technologies that can read and interact with human emotion. Now, that technology could one day lead to some very, very important aspects of increased intelligence in our machines, because one of the things that really informs a lot of our intelligence is how we place value in the world. If you, based on your emotions, you know what to look at, what to pay attention to at any given time. If I'm that chess playing computer or robot in a room and I'm playing away, performing excellently and beating the pants off of the human that I'm playing against, and that room catches on fire, the human is going to get up and leave, probably rapidly and with a little bit of emotion about it. That program or that robot or that computer is pretty much going to likely sit there and stay. It doesn't have any means of recognizing that its environment, its what values have changed in its conditions, and it needs to be able to change its mission based on that.
What scares you? What gives you hope?
The future gives me hope. So the future, as far as I'm concerned, is about potential. The future is what ultimately we are all striving toward. We may be able to remember the past, but being able to interact with and anticipate and direct our present day actions to build and generate a better future is really what gives us power as a species. Some of my biggest fears probably have a lot to do with algorithmic influence. The idea that as we develop these systems, as we interact more and more with these technologies, right now in the form of social media platforms, but potentially later on in terms of other forms of environment, AI in our environment, these systems have the potential to, if not themselves manipulate us, be able to be used by other people to manipulate us. That's enormously problematic. It literally gets to a stage where you can look at it and talk about it undermining free will very significantly. So I think that's probably one of my biggest long-term concerns is algorithmic influence.
Do you feel like we're already there?
I think we're on the road.
Yeah, it doesn't like, because now I'm hearing about things where like they can tailor this political message to this exact group, this political message to this exact group, even though that group wouldn't necessarily have voted for that candidate if it wasn't for this thing, right? Where it becomes so specific.
Definitely things like that, but I think more nefarious, for lack of a better word right now, is the problem that if you have a system that is able to read and interact with you, whether it's through visual cues, eventually emotional awareness of these systems and so forth, the ability for them to change their strategy, change script highly rapidly based on the feedback from us. This creates a feedback loop, one that in which we effectively become what's known in programming or in computer science as an optimization problem. You want the person to click and click and click again. Okay, well, let's feed them A and B. Oh, they click more on B. Well, let's do that again with another set, A or B, and you just keep doing it, and this is basically how something like Facebook works. That you extend that kind of thinking, that kind of potentially manipulation into, I mean, the ability to basically turn us into an algorithm for profit.
That's pretty much all the questions that I got, man. Is there anything you think that we missed or anything like that?
As I say, if we can imagine it, we can build it. If we can take responsibility for the future that we want to see built, we can build that too. But what we have to do along the way is not just assume that every single new thing is good. We have to be willing to assess as we go along and in the aftermath in order to try to protect the kind of, you know, future, not just that we create for ourselves, but that we leave for future generations.
Oh, let me ask you this. Like, what's kind of coming up next for you? I know you got some books out.
Working on the next book, but yes, always out there doing keynotes for different conferences, consulting for business, and certainly writing articles and books. So that's kind of my gig, and that's going to continue to be the case for a good number of years yet.
I want to thank Richard so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter and Instagram, and we have also included his information in the episode description. I think the really interesting thing about listening to him and looking at some of his books is that the concepts, like, they may jump out at you at first. Like, oh, that sounds different. But then when you really think about it, that's when you realize just how big of a change some of these things could be. Okay, now let's go ahead and bring in John Shaw and get to the pointless part of the show.
Do you feel like you wasted 2021?
That's such a... I'm going to say yes. I mean, I feel like the answer is no. However, looking back on it, I'm not entirely sure what I did other than just survive.
But do you feel like you wasted it more than other years? Or would you look at this year and be like, I really kind of phoned this one in?
My thoughts going into this year, I think I accomplished maybe 5% of what I thought this year was going to, you know, entail. But yeah, I mean, it's a wash. It's another wash year. This is the second wash year in a row, and 2022 looks no different, to be honest.
That's the problem, right? Like, I feel like I wasted 2021, but I don't really see myself improving in any way in 2022. Like, I'm just going to make all the same mistakes over again, I think. I haven't learned anything.
Well, I'm not entirely sure I made mistakes. I just didn't do anything, really.
No, that's probably really it. I just didn't do anything. Are you a New Year's resolution person?
I have thought about maybe trying to start some things on the first. I've never done that.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and tell us what those are, and then we'll hold you accountable throughout the year.
Well, one is becoming more fit. I would like to at least get some kind I don't know what you want to call it, workout in 4 out of 7 days during the week.
Now, is the goal to become more fit or to specifically lose weight?
I don't want to die when I'm 50. You know what I mean? Whatever that falls into.
That's a good goal. Okay, so you're going to lose weight. How much weight are you going to lose?
I mean, you might not believe this, but I probably could lose 40, 45 pounds and be relatively healthier. So I'm going to start just trying just day by day. I'm just going to try to do maybe 5 in a month and then see what happens.
Okay. I mean, so. I think that you need to have a little bit more of a plan if you really want to accomplish these goals. I think that you need to have, you know, put some real initiative into it.
This isn't a self-help, you know, a John Shull self-help episode here.
No, but we're just trying to help you. It's not self-help. It's about us helping you. That's what this is. So okay. Let's say you're 300 now, and you're going to get down to 260.
I'm not 300 pounds, okay. But okay.
How much are you then? All right.
I'm about 275.
Okay, so you're going to get down to 235.
Going to try, right. Yep. My main thing is I don't want it to. I've done these fad diets and I've done these fad workout things. Yeah, I want to do some. I want to make more of a life change. You know, I don't eat a lot of the. I don't eat a lot of vegetables. I don't eat a lot of the more high in.
Anything good is basically what you, the road that you're going down, right? We don't need to go into like all the food groups of things you don't eat: vegetables, fruit, any kind of dairy. Any kind of rice.
Oh, I eat some dairy. Don't you worry about that.
What?
But yeah.
Wait, what are you eating that's so much dairy?
Cheese? Milk?
You're drinking milk as an adult?
Who doesn't drink milk?
Are you serious?
Okay, this is insane. I think you're in the minority here, so you need to tread carefully. I think a lot of people are going to agree with me on this.
I don't think that many people drink milk. I guarantee you most adults do not drink milk.
Okay. When you say that, do you mean just a glass by itself or just in general, like mixing it with a protein shake or anything?
I see where you're going. right? I think that you could get in some extra percentage points if you're talking about people putting it in their cereal or putting it in like a meal replacement or anything like that. I'm talking about a glass of milk. I don't think that most adults drink a glass of milk.
Okay, can you give me a percentage? What's the what percentage would you say of American adult or not even American of adults drink a glass of milk a day?
I would be shocked if there's 5% of adults who drink a glass of milk a day.
I mean, I would think the number. I would think a quarter of the world would have a glass of milk a day. I think it's a lot more common than you think, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe milk isn't.
How many glasses of milk are you having a week?
I mean, I usually have one or two a day.
Do you have one or two glasses of milk a day? Like how big of a glass? How big of a glass are we talking about?
I mean, just
give me an ounce. Give me like 12 ounces?
Sure. We probably more like 16, to be honest.
You're drinking 32 ounces of milk a day.
when you say it like that, it does sound kind of excessive.
Yes. Sounds ridiculous. Yeah, all of a sudden you realize that you're drinking 32 ounces of milk a day, 64 ounces. That's a gallon. You're drinking a gallon of milk every 2 days. Dude, no fucking wonder, man.
Well, it's good, man.
It's not good.
It's good. Well, you're the same person that eats their cereal with water.
Well, I used to because I was too cheap to get milk. I was just like, I'm not going to go to the store to get milk. I got water right here.
So dumb.
Get the fuck so out of bad, here with man. That. I've also done it with coffee creamer. A little bit sweet. A little bit much on the body. All right, so you're going to lose weight. What's another goal of yours?
I'd like to read. I'm going to try to set a, read 30 minutes a day. I used to read a lot, actually, and I've kind of drifted away from that the last couple of years for whatever reason.
Got to learn about more submarines, man. You love learning about World War II submarines.
Oh, my God. Have you even read a total of 5 books in the last 5 years?
Oh, probably not. I haven't learned anything. Okay, you're going to read 30 minutes a day? How many books is that going to be? Is that going to be 10 books a year? Huh?
I'm going to try to do 30 this year.
You're going to read 30 books. Boy, this New Year's resolution is getting shot down fast.
I'm going to try. And I could put out a shameless plug for this this app that I've used called Goodreads, which you can track your progress of what you're reading and how far you're in it.
Yeah, you can also do that with like a bookmark. You can just put like a bookmark in the book, and then you know exactly how far you've read.
I know what a bookmark is.
You don't even have to use. You could also dog ear the pages, which I'm really against that. I think that's disrespectful to books, but that's another way. You don't have to have an app because then you have to. Like that's ridiculous to me. So you read the book, a physical paperback book. Mm-hmm. Then you go onto the app and mark where your place is on the book?
Well, I don't do it, but you can. You will say like how many pages have you read of this book? And then you say 95 out of 300, right? Whatever that is, 34%. So then people who follow you will see, "Oh, John's reading a book about."
Oh, so it's a competition.
Sometimes.
It's another way for people to measure their wieners, basically, is what it is. Except now we're doing it with books and how many pages you read? Oh, 6. Okay. All right. Do you have any more? Or is that all you're going to accomplish with your life this year?
I mean, those are the main two for personal, you know.
Okay. Okay. All right. Good. No, I think that's a good start. Going to get leaner and smarter. Always a good idea.
Got to try, man. What about you? You're not going to have any, are you?
I don't have any, no.
Good. Good for you.
Mine are all like the stupid ones that you can't actually measure. Like, I'm going to be more in the moment. I'm going to try to be more organized. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be more organized.
You're not going to... You got to stop crying during sex, too. That's a little weird.
Oh, well, that's what my wife likes. And besides, she hurts me. And I'm an emotional guy. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our shout-outs.
All right, man. Well, the final shout-outs of 2021, man. Kind of crazy to think about that. Mike Wynn, appreciate you. Martin Milham. Armando Romero. Charlotte Schaff. Shelby Cooper, Tony Lambert, William J. Trunlick III, Edgar Rodriguez, Ken Mend, and Stuart Muirhead. Appreciate every single one of you.
Okay. All right.
I have a question to you. How do you feel, and I'm not pinpointing William J. Trunlick III, but how do you feel about people putting their suffixes on their accounts, their handles? Are you okay
with
that?
Name? I'm okay generally only for the third, right? Okay. The third is kind of like, all right, that's fine. But once we get into like the fifth or the sixth or the seventh or something like that, now you're getting ridiculous. I think you're fine to have a senior, a junior, and a third. And then after that, like, look, we get it. Your name is Preston Johnsworth. We got it there. You have your family has a mansion in Connecticut. We understand. You're the 15th, like, chip in the line. Great. Leave it out of there. Aren't you, like, John the 15th or something like that?
No, I'm not. I'm supposed to be. But for some reason, my lovely parents, I have the same exact name as my father, first, middle, last. But I don't have a suffix. I'm not a junior. I'm not a two. I'm not anything.
I think you're automatically. I don't think have to, like, declare it.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's not on my birth certificate, I can tell you that. I don't know if those things go on your birth certificate, but I know that when I was a younger man, as weird as that sounds.
Wait a minute. Your dad gave you the exact same name, but like held off on calling you Junior in case you didn't turn into amount to much. And he was like, he's just going to, let's test the waters here.
I've never been called Junior. There's only one person in my entire life that has ever called me Junior, and it's a friend of the family. No one else has ever called me Junior.
Well, I feel like if your mom doesn't call you it, then it's like official that you're not a junior.
I'm not a junior. I've never been known as a junior. All right, I got a couple of humdingers for you here.
Okay.
I actually don't really know what that means, so hopefully it's nothing profane, but
sounds like it should be something sexual. Doesn't it?
Yeah. All right, so you're at a New Year's Eve celebration. Are you the first person to get drunk or the last person to be standing?
If I had to pick between the two of those, I'm going to be the first person to get drunk. But in reality, I'm probably like a hard charger where I'm not the first person, but I'm going to be the first person to like, ooh, he's getting after it. I'm not going to pass out right after New Year's, but I'm gonna hit probably like 1:15, 1:30, and then I'm done.
This is more just a question to you, but when is the last time you actually celebrated? When is the age that you stop giving a shit about being in a party atmosphere to ring in the New Year? I'm going to say 22, 23.
Oh, that's too early, man. No, that's too early. You can still have some good fun in your 20s and even into your 30s. I would say 33 was my last real like New Year's. But I think that you should. I agree with you in your idea that New Year's Eve is an overrated evening. I think it really is. It's generally not that fun, but it's still a big deal.
It's like what you just said. It's overrated. Drinks are always overpriced. Every place is packed. I don't know if it's that way now. What is New Year's Eve going to look like at the Vinzan household this year?
New Year's Eve
doing anything?
It's going to consist of me taking some illegal substances, some legal substances, and having a good fucking time. That's what it's going to involve. And being in bed by 10.
Yeah. Yep, me too.
How about the household?
Same, man. My wife, well, we're both working Saturday, so early, so we'll be in bed quite early.
Are you ready for our top five?
Yeah. Let's...
Oh, wait. I thought we were going to do our best of the year. What's your best of the year?
Oh, I didn't put anything. I thought we were – for what? I thought we weren't doing best of the year.
I thought you were going to do like your best movie of the year, your best book of the year, your best TV show of the year.
If you give me 30 seconds, I might be – I can at least tell you my favorite TV show of the year.
Okay.
Is Squid Game.
I can agree with that. I heard a lot of people say it was really good. It's too scary for me.
I would also say that Succession is up there, though I haven't finished it, so I can't I can't say how great it is, but it's really, really good.
Okay.
Even though that's not a 2021 show, but Squid Game is. Didn't see a lot of movies this year at all. The movies I saw aren't going to win any awards, so I'll just move on.
Well, what movie did you see that you're embarrassed to say?
Like, I thought the new Halloween was good for what it was.
Okay, you holding out for the new Blade? That's what it really is.
Here's something that you'll be embarrassed and you won't believe me when I tell you. I had never seen the Avengers.
Okay.
So I started watching from the first Avengers on, and they're actually quite good movies. They're not terrible movies. I thought they were going to be terrible. That's why I never spent my time on them.
They're legitimately good movies. The problem is that if you watch a bunch of them, they have a formula, right? They go action, funny comment from one of the stars that makes it seem like it's not that serious, go into action. And I've actually watched all of them except for the last Avengers, and then I stopped watching Marvel movies completely. Saw all the movies leading up to Avengers Endgame and then never watched Avengers Endgame.
Well, sounds like you have a New Year's Eve movie to watch then.
Not watching it. I don't think I ever will watch it, to be honest with you. Because my boy Thanos loses. Why do I want to watch that?
You do love Thanos. You once rated him the number one villain in all of movies.
He is. Well, no. Darth Vader's probably the number one villain in all of movies. But Thanos is definitely up there. Okay.
How about you? You have any best ofs?
No. Our top five is top five things we... Wait, hold on. How are we going to say this? Okay. Top five things we want to stop in 2022.
All right. My number five is I want to stop giving attention to people like Kim Kardashian and celebrities like that in terms of who they're dating, what they're doing. I could give a shit. And, you know, the Paul brothers, all these viral... So, quote unquote celebrities that I could care less if I never heard from them again.
I have this big theory that there's not really anybody who actually cares. That like what happens is the celebrity, like, this is all public relations marketing, and that they put this out there. There's not like real people that are actually like reading and commenting on these things. It's like bots that fuel these things to get to the top of social media. And then it's right in front of us, and we click on it because of that. But I don't think that, like, this. Who really gives a shit that this person is dating this person? Like, does anybody really care or is actually interested in this? Like, who's the person in your life that really is interested? Do you know anyone?
Man, that's a...
I can't think of a single person who is actually interested. So, like, how does this always rise to the top of everybody's news? It's got to be bots.
Either way, I'm just saying, like, it's been shown that Facebook manipulates its, you know, what you click on. So it plays perfectly into what you just said.
My number five is emojis. I feel like people should stop communicating in any sort of written form with emojis. It's fucking done, right? We were cool with that for a couple of weeks. It was an interesting thing, and now it's over with. No more emojis in text messages or emails. It's over. It's done.
See, I've actually embraced it. I sent you some earlier, like a middle finger, but then I sent a smiley face after just to tell you that I was just kidding, and I think you got it. It was effective.
And it was right then that I realized that, like, this form of communication needs to stop. We can't do that anymore.
I'm going to say my number four is my local sports team's sucking gigantic ass.
Oh, John is in Detroit, and... Detroit, God, like, how can they be so terrible for so long? The city also terrible, right? Like, how can one city be on such a downward slide in terms of the city and the sports teams?
Well, I mean, listen, I'm not going to bring it all around, but I don't think the city is that terrible. But the sports teams are, without a doubt, it's probably the shittiest major sports city in America, maybe the world. What's your number four?
Cancel culture. I don't know what cancel culture is. I don't want to get into cancel culture. I'm just sick of hearing about it. I think that we should, like, look, one, don't be so offended about things, and two, stop being so offensive to people. There, we're fucking done with it. I'm just sick of hearing about it.
Cancel culture is good. I have that on my honorable mention just because, kind of like you, I don't know who starts it. I don't know where it comes from. Like, I don't know what anything, you know, I don't know what happens with it, I guess. My number three is another personal one here, and it's I really hope people in my house start replacing the fucking toilet paper rolls.
I feel like that's actually directed at you, and that you should be doing that, and it's probably you're the one who did it.
It's not directed at me, I can tell you that.
Okay. My number three is ice. I hate ice. I think we should get rid of ice. Like, I'm not talking about ice in the drinks or ice outside when you go into, like, the forest and shit. But we should get rid of ice on sidewalks and in roads and just in our daily lives. Like, ice is generally a terrible thing, and we should get rid of it. I'm not talking about climate change stuff. We need to save the glaciers. But we should get rid of ice in urban environments.
I'm at a loss of words. Usually I'm the one that says something completely out of left field, and now it's you. I don't know what to say or how to go on from that.
Do you want to keep ice and think we should have it around?
I mean, ice is fine. I don't see why I don't have a problem with ice.
Well, clearly you didn't just fall on the ice before we were recording this, so go ahead. What's your number two?
Gotcha. I see where that was going now. My number two here is rich people going into space.
I agree with that. I think we should definitely stop with rich people going into space. Because we don't even get the good ones. We're sending up celebrities that, like, nobody's ever even heard of. Like, if it's not Tom Hanks or Denzel Washington or Scarlett Johansson, I don't care about any celebrities going into space. Send more famous people into space.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson feels? Or Bill Nye? They've never been into space, but fucking Michael Strahan has.
It's got to be a huge insult, honestly.
Yeah.
For Bill Nye not to have been to space. And Michael,
you know what?
Strahan,
you could just literally get rid of... If I never had to hear Elon Musk talk again, I would be okay with that. And I don't wish him ill will. I'm not saying he should die. I'm just saying if he went away and I never had to hear his name ever again, I wouldn't think twice about it.
Yeah, I could put Elon Musk on the list, to be honest with you, just hearing about it all the time.
Yeah.
My number two is influencers. Any kind of influencer. I don't care what it is. I don't want to hear about any more influencers.
Once again, it's kind of like what my number five was. Like, I just don't understand what makes you an influencer? That you have money?
Well, I think that the problem is that there's a real correlation between, like, bad advice and influencers. And if you look at influencers, most of them generally don't know the thing they're talking about.
No.
Don't know anything about the thing that they're talking about. And are vastly more popular and more listened to than people who actually do know what they're talking about.
I mean, listen, if anything that this pandemic's taught us is that people don't listen to those who know what they're talking about.
Oh, here we go.
Which leads me to my number one, which should be everyone's number one, is I want this fucking pandemic to end in 2022. I want it to be classified as an endemic, and I just want it to be over.
You know that endemic doesn't mean that the pandemic ends, right? Endemic means that it's here forever. It's not that that's when the pandemic ends. It's the endemic. That's not how that.
Yeah,
works.
but it becomes like a mainstay, like a flu instead of like, you know, we have this strain after that strain, that strain. Like, I just want it to be here if it's going to be here forever, and I just want to move on, you know. But until then, you have to be safe, and you have to be responsible when others aren't. I just, you know, I'm just ready for it to go into that final stage if that's what it's going to be, and let's just move on. Like, let's, you know, just want to move on from this. We're going on 3 fucking years next year.
My number one is Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I wasn't being real, I guess, if I wasn't being serious, all social media could go to hell. I don't care about social media. I think it's terrible.
Okay. There's John's take on the world where he hates everything besides submarines.
Formula One and Tom Brady.
Formula One. God. Yeah, I'd like to. Tom Brady's another one I'd like to just go away. just because I'm tired of hearing about it. I got nothing against him. I'm just tired of hearing about Tom Brady all the time. And Will Smith. I don't care about Will Smith. I don't want to hear what Will Smith. No one should be allowed to interview Will Smith ever again. Because every time somebody asks him a question, he comes up with some shit that nobody wanted to know.
Does he? I guess I didn't realize that Will Smith was...
Yeah. Look up like Will Smith interviews, and he's always talking about something like, I didn't want to know that.
All right. I mean, listen, you know, I got nothing but love for Will Smith, you know? He was just born and raised on a street...
Yeah, let's hear you
do it. On a playground where he spent most of his days.
Where? What city?
Philly.
What part of Philly?
West Philadelphia, born in West Philly.
I thought for a second it could be South Philadelphia. In West Philadelphia, born and raised. Chilling out, maxing and relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys, they were up to no good.
Started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got one little fight. My mom got scared and said,
you're moving with your Indian uncle, you better.
Welcome to 2022, people. That's it.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, please leave a review. We really appreciate it. And if you're on Spotify, they just brought out a new rating system. So if you're listening there, leave us a rating. Really helps out the show, and we appreciate it. And let us know what are some of the things that you don't want to see continue in the new year.